Good afternoon. It's 6 minutes past 12. This is Manx Radio and this is The Man in Line. Through to 1 o'clock today, Treasury Minister Alfred Cannon is in the studio. If you want to get in touch, text 166177, email studio@manxradio.com or call 66 13 68. So no further confirmed positive tests for coronavirus, no active cases. The total number of confirmed cases stays at 336. There have been 7,801 concluded tests, 16 people waiting for results, and no one's in the queue for a test at the moment. So, Alfred Cannon, it's been a long week, a long Tynwald, and my word, we are in a place, compared to where we were, how does Treasury view where we are now?
Well, we've delivered our budget update. I mean, clearly the island's position has materially changed in terms of our fiscal position, our fiscal plans. We are dealing with an economic, a difficult economic situation. I was going to say an economic crisis. I don't think it's a crisis for us, but it's certainly difficult. We are very cognizant now, recognise very much that there is a lot of global pressure around. You can see a lot of the facts and figures that are coming through from the UK and more broadly across the world. There is definitive evidence now that the globe is in a recession, heading potentially for a depression. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of work to do over the next 12 months and beyond to correct the position. Our focus now, number one priority, is to do as much as we can to protect the economy. We've got to drive jobs, we've got to drive opportunities, and you know, we're gearing up for what could be a difficult 9 months. But I think the focus for us now will be, we're going to create a new economic recovery group that will meet for the first time next week, start to put the detail around the package, the £100 million that we've said we have available to try and support the economy, drive jobs, drive opportunity, and take everybody through till next March, next April, when I hope there will be some form of normality and we'll at least have the opportunities going again with the tourist market for the domestic economy.
You gave the statement on Tuesday, the interim budget on Tuesday. Were you driven by events, or how much latitude did the department have with the situation you were presented with? What I'm trying to say is the situation that's come, the crisis, or if you like, the financial straits we find ourselves in now, is what you're doing the only game in town? There's no other way to stimulate the economy.
Well, look, you know, both history will be the judge, and I'm sure that other people may have other views in terms of what we're doing. You know, we were presented with a crisis situation in March. Right from the word go, it was pretty clear to us that there was going to be an economic crunch coming, and there were going to be problems. I think the scale of that became clearer and clearer week by week, and I think, and I said in my speech that it was Flybe. I once Flybe had collapsed, really brought home, I think, to the island and to Treasury that we were in a crisis at that point in terms of what we needed to do and in terms of the need then to react. I think broadly speaking, we put together in a very short space of time, and a tremendous amount of work went into designing and putting those support schemes in. I think the package of support schemes that we brought forward in crisis mode was both the right package, covered most of the bases, and you know, together with the support schemes that we brought forward for individuals as well, inclusive of those, you know, has taken us successfully as we can through the crunch period of everybody being at home, through the health crisis, you know, and back out the other side to a point where large parts of the economy now are functioning, you know, but we still have critical areas that we need to focus on, and that's and you know, addressing that, how we address that, how we now redress the balance in terms of the fiscal position, because we have spent significant sums of money, as I outlined in the budget, income projections for this year in terms of where we were expecting and what we're now expecting are up between £120 to £190 million less. So, you know, there's a huge amount for us to tackle and get to grips with as we move forward. And, you know, in terms of designing solutions, you know, we're working on what we think are the best solutions at the moment. But we're listening as well. We're listening to various groups and we're listening to people. And some of it You know, we're hoping to act in the right way and take the island forward with leadership. But I also accept, and because of the way this crisis is playing out in terms of the global health crisis and in terms of the way the economic situation is playing out, that we may at times have to be reactive. So there's a huge amount for us to do. I think we've put the right structures in place. I think we've announced the right funding levels. We need to add the detail to that, and we need to, you know, deliver on our promises.
So what is the situation with MIRA at the moment? What's going to happen now?
So all the support, so we've had these direct support schemes as part of the packages, Andy. So in the support schemes, we had indirect support in which the taxpayer was underwriting bank lending. We've brought a new bank guarantee loan out, which is 100% taxpayer backed, so businesses can have access. There's two loan options there for business to access capital. We are going to continue in some form with the direct support, but predominantly now that is starting to phase out, and the MIRA is a direct support mechanism. There was no means testing to MIRA. There was really very little in terms of applications. We just simply took people at face value, and we gave that support mechanism if they were out of work. But you can't just continue to pump taxpayers' money into these direct support schemes that are unchecked. We have to find mechanisms to see through what's effectively going on underneath. Yes. Out of the 1,500 now, well, less than 1,500 people who are getting MIRA really need to see how many of them can get back to work, have got options to get back to work, how many of them are genuinely unemployed. And those people who are unemployed now need to transition onto our unemployment benefit so that we've got a RIC on it, if you like, understand people's situations, and then can get the support to them that they need to try and find opportunities.
So we have, I mean, for the Isle of Man, it's fairly eye-watering, 1,100 or so people out of work. How many do you think that will get down to? What do you think it will shake down to?
Well, you know, we when I first came in, I mean, bear in mind in 2011, I can't remember the exact figure, but it was somewhere about 1,200 or 1,300 people were unemployed at that point on effectively the back of the financial crisis in 2008. And it's taken us, you know, six, seven years to bring that down. And we did. We brought it down incredibly successfully, particularly the period 2016 to basically now. You know, we've taken that down to 400 people, and effectively it was hard to get that figure any lower. That was a record low. You know, it's clearly it's jumped back up again now. You know, clearly we recognise we're going to have sectors, the tourism, travel, hospitality sector, which is effectively hardly functioning. You know, we've got to find ways to try and support those businesses and get opportunities through. And of course, part of the point is alongside those 1,100 people who are formally registered as unemployed, I now need to understand from the 1,500 or so who are on the MIRA, how many of those people are genuinely unemployed.
Yes.
And we need to sort that out. And that's why MIRA is slowly but surely coming to a halt and will finish in September. And we're going to have to then, we'll then genuinely see, you know, where the core unemployment is. And that's how then we need to tackling that with the sort of range of options that we've delivered in terms of what we think will be necessary for us to bring forward, both in terms of employment opportunities, direct training opportunities, and government investment to drive jobs and opportunity for those people.
Talking about the coronavirus business working capital loan agreement, that's Conister are helping with that, aren't they?
Yeah, that's you know, £10 million we've put up as guaranteed money. So the easiest way for us to get money in is through the existing lenders. They're in the best position to understand and assess viability of businesses. So that is the backstop, if you like. So any business, first of all, my recommendation is go to your existing bankers. There's 80%, you know, who are all on board for an 80% government underwrite, if you like, for any lending. But they've still got to lend that to a business who has a viable,
yes,
you know, future in front of them. We can't just lend money if the business is not recoverable.
And presumably the business owners will know whether it's going concern.
That will be a judgment for both the business owners clearly and for the bank and their credit committees. So what we've said here is that absolutely that first stop is the bank. And then beyond that, if the business you know, for whatever reason, the bank whose criteria is probably going to be slightly stricter, and that business owner feels actually this is not the right decision, I know that I can make this work, then that option with Conister, which is a new scheme that we've designed, as I said, 100% backed, will give the first year interest free in terms of the lending, is there. So, you know, I think we've put in place that option for business. And of course, you know, that's not to say businesses cannot still get grants to develop their businesses or change their business models. You know, they still need to go and speak to the Department for Enterprise, you know, who may well have that funding available for them, depending on what's being, you know, presented and or whether they fit into the framework of existing schemes. So there's quite a lot out there, actually. But businesses, obviously, banks, you know, and if they're really struggling and they're trying to understand more about whether there's an opportunity for them to redesign their business or they think they can create a new opportunity, they should definitely speak to the Department for Enterprise, who are all ears at the moment in terms of trying to understand their ability to help people.
You were instrumental in the purchase of the Steam Packet, weren't you?
Very much so.
Okay. Yeah. How would you feel about underwriting an airline?
I think, Andy, the travel situation obviously is very much at the top of our agenda. I mean, as well, you know, the borders situation, what's happening in terms of travel. Clearly, I think the island is in a good position having its own shipping business. It makes sense to have that security. There is only room for one shipping business. We've basically fulfilled two routes. It's a much simpler proposition than it is when it comes to air travel.
Everybody accepts that buying the Steam Packet was the right thing to do, and it took a whole section of tension out of COVID. It meant we never had to worry about an owner somewhere else in the world owning the boat and the freight and what have you. And knowing that it was owned on the Isle of Man was a tremendous morale booster, I think.
Mm. Well, it allowed us, you know, to effectively properly manage the situation in terms of getting core supplies to the island, because the airlines effectively had collapsed, mm-hmm. all the routes. I mean, we have kept some airlines going on a skeleton service. There's still some activity there. You know, the key consideration for us now is, you know, what is air travel going to look like? How quickly can we get and EasyJet back, for example, and are they willing to come back, and what capacity? You know, so we will have a question hanging over air and air security in terms of travel. But for us to rush in at this stage and make a decision to buy an airline or invest in an airline, I think is probably an unnecessary move. You know, whilst we've got the summer and the autumn to come, and we've got the security of the sea service.
Mm. Do you think it's the end of open skies, though, for the future? Do you think we'll...
These things will have to be looked at, Andy. Yeah. No, I take a very practical view on these things. I think we have to look at the strategic situation. I'm not that keen to invest taxpayers' money personally into air travel. I think that's much better run by privateers, by private industry. But, you know, by the same token, if there is a strong argument in the future that the island will now benefit from having secured air travel via you know, either a share or a whole share in an airline, then, you know, we will carefully consider it. But look, you know, there's a lot of huge amounts of commitments here that will need to be considered and looked at. And our fiscal position now, yeah. in terms of our fiscal plans as well, are very much now going to have to be reshaped both next February in terms of the main budget and also the February after. Clearly, when there'll be not only will there be a new parliament, but there's going to be an ongoing need to readdress the balance or the fallout from the shocks that have happened as a result of COVID.
Situations change all the time, obviously. So where the finances are concerned, how easy is or how difficult is it to have a strategic view of where we're going to be in 3 months' time, because things may change?
Well, I mean, that was primarily the purpose of bringing forward the budget update, so that we could paint the picture as much as we could, get some control over where government spending was in terms of what was happening with departments. And you'd see in that budget update, we've allocated an additional £25 million because departments have not got the income coming in that they were expected to achieve. And we also painted what we thought was a scenario for government income in terms of the impacts that, that we would have felt from primarily, obviously, the economy, and also where we've had to effectively step in and offer business the ability to delay their payments. And we did that, obviously, predominantly with VAT, but of course we've also said to business during this period, if they've got problems and we can assist in terms of understanding how we can work with them to deal with their statutory debts or statutory payments, then we will.
Did you ever consider, as a note in just saying, did you ever consider raising the top rate of tax? Because obviously there's not much we can do with indirect taxation with fuel duty and VAT, but we can affect our own personal taxation rates. Was there ever a thought that income tax would go up on the island?
First of all, fortunately, you know, we do have substantial assets that we are dipping into. So from a cash flow perspective, you know, we've got the funds available, and you will recognise that I have sought Timwood approval, which has been given, to arrange effectively an additional £250 million of cash availability, which will stop us having to cash in investments that are potentially at the moment undervalued. So from that perspective, as it stands, we've got the cash to deal with this, and I think with the economy back running and the money flowing, we're okay. So, and now is not the time, I think, for knee-jerk reactions. Certainly don't want to be taking either austerity actions, if we can avoid it, or do we want to be taking increasing taxation on a knee-jerk. I think we can get through this period. If we can sensibly get through to February, you know, we will have a greater understanding as each month goes by what the fiscal position is looking like. And then we will have to determine a new fiscal strategy going forward. And taxation will certainly be part of our considerations. We promised a new economic strategy for the island, trying to work out where we sit internationally, both from a taxation perspective, but also, you know, what challenges are, other challenges are facing us and what opportunities we should be seeking to do. And taxation is very much in the mix. But, you know, if possible, the island, you know, we want to keep taxation low because the island is built around that. And that's what I think has driven the island very successfully over the last few years and will continue to drive the island forward as successfully.
Well, as you say, low-tax jurisdictions, I mean, there are lots of them around the world. We have to maintain our position as a low-tax jurisdiction, do you think?
I do, but I also think that we need to be prepared to consider our position. There's a lot of pressure on low-tax jurisdictions. Again, you know, as a result of this crisis, you will see the reports coming through, certainly the newspapers, but, you know, behind the scenes, we're well aware that discussions are ongoing and there is this attention once again, floating around international jurisdictions who seem to be, you know, pointing fingers and saying, actually, you know, we need to gather in our resources and we feel that a lot is being lost, you know, offshore. Now, I think the island's position, I've gone through this a number of times, but I think the island's position in terms of our recognition, our signing up to the taxation standards, our adherence to standards, the progress that we've made, everything we've got in place. Actually, when you start examining it, we are normally come out incredibly well. But nevertheless, those pressures are there and we need to examine it moving forward.
So do you think the COVID-19 crisis may bring that whole, I mean, basically going through the same hoops again, the whole point about low taxation jurisdictions around the world, of course, as well. And the Isle of Man has historically met every criterion.
Yeah, well, and that's why I say, you know, we need to examine this position, our strategic position moving forward from an economic perspective. That's something we're going to do in the coming months, you know, and taxation and taxation strategy will be very much at the heart of that.
Okay, we've got a message for you now, and let's see. It's sir, your message, sir.
Hi, I just wondered if you could all ask Mr. Cannon when he's on the man in line about this furlough thing, you know, about how long it lasts for, because a lot of the businesses aren't really back to normal yet and it's going to take quite a while for them to get back up to normal. So has he made any plans, and for which sectors he's made plans for, to extend this service? Thank you.
Yeah, well, thanks very much for that question. As I think we just sort of covered that before, Andy, the furlough, well, it's not furlough scheme, it was actually a salary support scheme. But the salary support scheme is tapering off The only areas really with advantages are going to be in tourism and travel. The majority of sectors will find that the salary support scheme will taper off in July and August for them. And I would urge everybody involved in those sectors to check the specific details on the website. And we will slowly but surely bring that or taper that scheme down. Actually, we did a survey of 400 businesses before we made this decision. And the vast majority of businesses that we received information from were actually back to trading as normal. Their turnover was normal. They were expecting turnover to stay as normal and was going to be better or increased. So there is actually evidence that is coming through to us that the businesses are operating in a position that they were pre-COVID. I accept there's still sector-specific issues, and we're going to continue to look at that. But Andy, you know, we have to accept in these difficult situations that we're coming into that, you know, the government cannot support every single business and every single circumstances. Part of the problem of putting direct support in the way that we were, and there were qualifications around that, i.e. a business had to have 25% turnover, you actually start potentially to distort the market, giving support to businesses in competition with each other, one who's getting support, one who's not, or you're sustaining jobs that are actually not there. In other words, the business has already decided that they're going to change direction or reshape themselves. So there's a number of issues with the kind of direct support, and eventually people just got sort of get hooked on that. And you know, not every business is you know, the circumstances that COVID has brought about and the position that they're in now is not all solely down to COVID. In other words, there was quite a lot of weakness in the marketplace before, and these are very difficult decisions that we're making. But you know, the decision has been made that you cannot just pay broad-based salary support or MIRA without getting much more specific and being much more targeted in terms of and how this money is being delivered into the marketplace. But the one thing I would say to everybody is that if the situation took a turn from the worse, these schemes can be turned back on. But let's hope we don't get back into a situation where we are effectively sending people back home to try and protect health.
28 minutes past 12. Your Treasury Minister, Alfred Cannon, MHK, is on the man in line today. And if you want to get in touch, lots of messages in, which we'll come to in a few moments' time.
Private school on the island is opening a nursery.
Yay!
King William's College is welcoming little ones from the age of 2 to the Buchan School from the 1st of September. At the Buchan Nursery, children will receive a fun and unique blend of learning through play and high-quality early years education. They'll enjoy a range of activities, including Buchan bushcraft, music, swimming, French and more, including a sensory room and a STEM studio. To register your child, call 820-110 today.
Most worthwhile things in life need care right from the start. At Moore Stephens Business Sense, we know that from experience. We've coached 150 startup businesses. Our suite of services supports the very personal needs of those courageous individuals who set out in businesses of their own. Yes, we're part of Moore Global, operating in more than 110 countries, but we understand that big or small, business requires the personal touch. Trust us today to take it personally when you call on 662020.
What's too hot in summer and too cold in winter? Your conservatory. Well, now, Phoenix Windows can convert your conservatory roof with a solid, lightweight, insulated roof to turn your conservatory into a room you can comfortably use all year round. Phoenix Windows, for free estimates, free surveys, bespoke made-to-measure windows, guaranteed work, and all-island coverage. For your free, no-obligation quotation, call 816628 or visit phoenixwindows-iom.com.
At Athol Garage, we've a fantastic offer available this month. Every car sold comes with a free 3-year service plan. Yes, you heard that right. 3 years free servicing. Visit our showroom or athol.im. Find us on Facebook or call
Athol Garage, Ballasalam, 820082.
Welcome to the Miller Chaps of Ramsey Summer Sale, where you'll find fabulous reductions throughout the store, from beds and flooring to sofas, cane furniture and accessories, rugs, pictures, mirrors and even wallpapers. Plus, the friendly Miller Chaps team are here as always with a warm welcome and expert help and advice when needed. Don't miss the Miller Chaps of Ramsey Summer Sale, now on.
Creating a home where you'll love to be. Miller Chaps of Ramsey.
With everything that's going on around us, there's a pleasure in store. An invitation to choose a case of six of the same great wines from around the world and only pay for five. Starting at £35 for six, to the ultimate. Choose selected Sainsbury's Taste the Difference wines, Prosecco, or even the finest champagne. Indulgent? Well-deserved, I'd say. The 6 for 5 summer wine offer at Shoprite and Winerite, proudly locally owned.
The winning continues next week on Manx Radio when we have another huge prize to give away, a 7th generation iPad from Manx Telecom. Each day from Monday through to Friday, we'll have a pixelated picture on the Manx Radio Facebook page of a mystery island location. And when we open the window of opportunity and give a short clue, you'll have 5 minutes to text your answer. We'll then do the prize draw at the end of the week on The Late Show with Stu. So make sure you like the Manx Radio Facebook page and make sure you're with us all next week on The Nation Station, when an iPad from Manx Telecom could be yours.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint, furnished by Magic Carpets.
Treasury Minister Alfred Cannon is with us today. So we're trying to create new jobs, Minister, and re-specialise the workforce. Are you confident that the island's labour force can reskill and move? If some jobs disappear, as some may do, as you say, if there were some companies that weren't functioning financially before COVID-19, if they disappear and the workforce has to reskill, how do we reskill them?
So this is all part of our outline plans for our economic recovery. We're very conscious that unemployment levels may rise, you know, and in the plans that we've got on going to be driven through the Economic Recovery Group, we have plans to reskill and retrain up to 1,000 people. We will do that a number of ways. We can do that through school and through UCM. We can do that through offering different training courses, maybe digital skill training for people who may be lacking in those areas. And we can also do it directly with businesses. So there's a number of options for us. We've got to add detail in that area, Andy. But we're not sitting still. You know, not only are we going to be looking at that area in terms of opportunities, you know, we are going to make, we've brought forward a number of government projects so far, £900,000, but there's millions of pounds being spent in capital infrastructure projects, and they will provide opportunities, particularly for those in the construction industry and areas directly associated with that. We're also going to work hard to make sure that the economy is being promoted as much as possible. And we will consider what measures can be brought in to encourage people to spend their money locally, but also make sure businesses are being promoted properly. And not only just our local businesses, of course, you know, I think David Neeshaw from RL360 was saying the other day that we need to get out there and promote the island. And we mustn't take our eye off the ball from that, because I think we're in a great, in many ways, despite all the negativity, there's also lots of opportunity out there, Annie. And the island is a safe island, an island that is moving towards a wholesale inclusive digital environment, and an island that's moving towards a carbon neutral, carbon zero carbon environment with the Professor Curran report and the opportunities we've got to develop that. So there's lots of opportunity that we can make happen. We've also got to do is balance that out with potentially higher levels of unemployment and making sure that people can get as much opportunity as they can for work and to keep them and their families sustained.
What do you think David Neeshaw meant by when he said, we don't need the government's help on day-to-day business, we need them to get out and promote the Isle of Man?
Which is really what the direction that we are trying to go in now. And I agree with David Neeshaw. You know, what you don't want is just direct government support pouring into to businesses if you can help it, because people just become addicted to it and they fail then to adapt and fail to change. We need to give business the framework to succeed, and that's going to be our primary purpose. That's what we've targeted £100 million around doing, is giving everybody as much opportunity for them to get out there, win business, create jobs, and create opportunity.
Okay, let's go to David. You're live with Alfred Cannon. David.
Hello, Mr. Cannon. It's a question about private pensions. In the UK, if you pay into a private pension, you get tax relief, and it's paid into your pension at source. Over here, you get tax relief, but you end up getting the money back in the way of tax relief. Now, over the period of a pension, the tax relief that goes into your pension, it makes a massive, massive difference to how much you get paid out. Not only that, it makes the individual less reliant on the state. So why is there a difference here on the island?
David, you'll have just have to explain yourself a little bit more. Sorry,
I have a pension in the UK.
Yeah.
A pension in the UK, I paid X amount in per month,
yeah.
And then the government added whatever tax relief was available to me or on that pension, it went into my pension pot for the private pension. Now, over here, if I put the same amount of money into a pension here, I get tax relief, so I don't pay as much tax, so it ends up, that tax relief ends up in my pocket, which is not where I want it. I want it in the pension pot.
Well, I mean, you know, we've got our structure over here. We've looked very carefully at the pension structure that we've got. As you know, we've actually improved it. I think we've improved it in the last couple of years by bringing in the pension freedom schemes, which allow people much more access. I think, you know, pension's quite complex area in terms of the structure around it. We are continually looking at how we can incentivize people to invest into their pensions. But that's the structure at the moment, and I guess there's always a variance. But ultimately, you know, you as an individual, I expect, can choose to invest more into your pension if you wish.
Okay, all right, David. Thanks for that. In fact, we've got another David now. Hello, David.
Hello, Andy.
Yes, David. You're with Alfred Cannon.
Yeah, a question for the Minister, if I may. This week, Minister, we've seen our teachers being awarded the same pay rise as their counterparts in England. 3.1%. I understand 1.1% of that award is going to have to be met by the department through efficiency savings, etc. However, what I want to come to is the statement issued by your colleague, Minister Allinson, on the 14th of July, where he said that the unions, in addition to any award they get this year, are seeking a further 9% spread over 3 years, plus an unconsolidated lump sum equating to £1.75 million for the upper leadership pay scales. So my question to you is, can you confirm that that 9% and lump sum demand is totally unacceptable?
Well, I'll leave teacher negotiations to Dr. Allinson and the Minister, but I will say this. First and foremost, the department are having to pay for that award, and they've got to find the money. All the departments in the budget this year were given a 2% allowance for pay. Anything above 2%, they've got to find, and I made it expressly clear yesterday to Dr. Allinson that he would have to find the money in his department. The situation, David, has fundamentally changed now. And you know, the teaching unions have got to get their heads around the fact that COVID-19 has altered completely the fiscal position of the Isle of Man government, and that we are in a period of great uncertainty. My advice to them and to everybody right now across the public sector, you know, who I think we have made progress with in the last 4 years, but now we need to knuckle down, do the very best we can in terms of delivering public services, and it's going to now be the budget next year before we are in a position to understand where pay sits. But you know, when we've got a situation where the private sector is struggling day to day in large quantities to keep their businesses alive, restructure their businesses, keep people employed, where people are having to take pay cuts and where we're facing large-scale redundancies, it is going to be unacceptable to find public sector pay union and bodies determining awards that are clearly going to be unmanageable.
Well, I guess as a parent, Mr. Cannon, I totally support that position. I think it's the right decision. I, as a parent, am getting rather fed up with the teachers bleating about cost of living, etc. It affects us all in the same way. We're all in this together. That's a horrible phrase to use, but we are in this context. And please, please, be robust with them.
Well, I will give you that assurance, David, because you know, my priority Treasury's priority. The priority for many of my colleagues who I work on a day-to-day basis with and from a political perspective is the economy, right? We are focused on keeping the economy, the economic conditions on this island sustained now for however many months this is going to take until we can actually get some relief going in terms of having the borders open, getting domestic economy going, etc. The delivery of public services, and there's a huge amount of well-paid professionals doing that. They have got to get on now and focus on delivering that. We saw across the public sector in many areas a huge positive reaction to the COVID crisis. I'm incredibly impressed with so many people, and the teachers and teachers unions now have a huge job to do. They need to knuckle on and get that done, because there's a lot of catching up to do, and we've got children coming through now, GCSEs next year, the A-level groups for next year. They need a lot of attention, and you know, I'll be incredibly disappointed if we don't see the teachers knuckling down. And let me just carry on, Andy. I mean, I don't want to paint everybody into the same brush, because often you find one or two aggravators, and actually the truth is people just want to get on and do what they're being asked to do. And there are some really good, positive teaching staff out there. But unfortunately, some of this language at the moment is distorting the situation. And I really do think they need to knuckle down now and get on with teaching our children.
OK, thank you, David.
Thank you.
Good to talk to you. We're with Alfred Cannon, MHK. The hospitality sector is something you've talked about quite a lot. I think you mentioned something about hospitality assets need to be retained for when we come through this. In terms of GDP, the hospitality sector is not enormous, and yet it, in almost inverse proportion, affects everybody. Most people like to go out and blow off steam. So how do you retain hospitality assets, because lots of them have been hit inordinately in the past 4 months?
So you know, obviously there is a critical area here of concerns, particularly around accommodation and accommodation providers who have absolutely no business in some instances. I mean, there is a bit of staycation going on. We brought forward the strategic capacity scheme, so that's been their direct scheme, if you like, in terms of input. Predominantly that's been given out on a pounds per room basis. And, you know, we've extended that scheme through to September. We've got work to do now to understand how we can support these businesses through, trying to keep these hotels and tourist accommodation providers intact in some form through the winter. And really, we are just trying to keep people intact. We have to work out alongside that what and how we could protect associated jobs. And we need to be careful that we're not just paying money for jobs that aren't going to be there in next March and next April. And you know, more broadly, as I said, you know, alongside that, I hope to a degree, and I know the restaurants and pubs and things have found it very hard, so their support schemes are going to continue for a little while. But you know, again, we're going to need to look carefully at that sector. And one of the principles that we brought forward in the budget update, so when we need to be fair, we can't just pick individual businesses here and there. The support's either there for the sector and it's there on an equal and fair basis, or it's not going to be there. And we've said if the market is functioning, even if it's restricted, but if it's functioning on a fair and equal basis, then, you know, the direct support in terms of how we're allocated at the moment is unlikely to be made available. So it's going to be tough for our businesses. But those areas that we recognise there is a clear distortion of the market because we, for example, closed the borders, like tourist accommodation providers, then we're going to have to take action or continued action.
Alfred Cannon's with us through to one. If you want to get in touch, you can text 166177, email studio@manxradio.com, or call 66 1368.
Bathroom suite, showers and accessories, all at down-to-earth prices. When you visit Paysetter, Harris Terrace, Douglas. Luxury design at bargain prices.
One of the smartest things you'll do today is plan for tomorrow today.
At NFU Mutual Douglas, we believe in having real conversations with our customers. That's why we know our customers prefer car insurance they can rely on. We understand customers, and unlike some others, we don't charge admin fees for making changes to your policy. With NFU Mutual Douglas, your no-claims discount is protected if you're hit by an uninsured driver. Terms and conditions apply. We also include RAC breakdown cover as standard if you break down more than a quarter of a mile from home and the total recovery distance is less than 20 miles. These are some of the reasons we are the Which? Recommended car insurance provider. If you'd like to have a real conversation about quality car insurance, call our team today on 674 191.
Now more than ever, Manx Telecom is keeping you connected. You can now renew your contract up to 3 months early, which means you can have the latest 4K video calls and better photo quality too, as well as saving 3 months of payments. Doing all we can to keep you in touch. Visit manxtelecom.com/here for you or shop at mt.im/shop. MT, here for you.
The Pasco's electrical appliance showroom is now open and operating to current safety guidelines. Alongside doorstep deliveries, we can now undertake electrical appliance installations, subject to a risk assessment. If you still can't make it to the showroom, don't worry. Just call 676066 or email pascos@manx.net and we can organise order and payment contact-free. Stay safe from all of us at Pasco's of Tramode, your island's premier electrical appliance retailer.
Run a small business or just need more room in the back of your transport? Then visit Philshaw Vehicles in Tramode. Whether you're moving tools, boxes, sports equipment, pizzas or even dogs, Philshaw has the perfect light van for all your needs. Specialising in vans for over 20 years, Philshaw always has a great range of used light commercials in stock with finance available. Call into Philshaw Vehicles on the Tramode Estate. Call 49 51 49 or see the range at philshawvehicles.in.
Going back in time on the sounds of the nation, it's the Caroline Flashback.
Later in the day, the town will be invaded by about 5,000 mods and rockers.
You're listening to Carnaby Street.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Chris Williams.
This is the medium wave service of Manx Radio, the first ever station to be authorized to broadcast in the medium wave band with a local commercial service for the people of the Isle of Man.
Saturday mornings, 8:30.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint. Furnished by Magic Carpets.
With Alfred Cannon, I've got a note in from Valerie, Mr. Cannon. Mr. Cannon just said that people weren't means tested for MIRA, but this isn't true. Some people never got anything, and those that did were means tested to show that their NI was paid up to date. Lots of people had to pay their NI, which is fine, but then weren't paid any MIRA from April the 22nd until they pay their NI. This was wrong, as NI was to cover up to April the 15th. So, in fact, it was meant people were due to it from lockdown. We lost 5 weeks MIRA, and now we're going to be losing more, says Valerie.
Well, you know, clearly that there have been some individual circumstances where people didn't have up-to-date national insurance contributions, and that caused a bit of an issue in terms of...
And that was paying. The rule. That was the rule. Everything had to be up-to-date.
We were paying out of the national insurance account. That is a public fund. You know, there has to be a level of responsibility on the individuals to pay their national insurance contributions. I think there were one or two cases where people hadn't paid national insurance and were expecting money to be paid out, and we had to sort those issues out. But look, broadly, Andy, I mean, the point is now, you know, just to reiterate, we now need to understand what is actually happening. We can't just pay out MIRA on an endless basis. We have to start tapering it down to us seem the most reasonable, logical way to go. And to help people get back into work who are on MIRA, and or if they're genuinely unemployed, then they need to now to move or consider moving across to Job Seekers Allowance. And let me say, Job Seekers Allowance can also pay in circumstances, albeit, you know, there are different add-ons for Job Seekers, but that by itself can pay over £200 a week, depending, as I said, on an individual circumstances. So, but we don't, you know, again, support schemes, these direct support schemes, absolutely necessary at the time, absolutely necessary through the crisis. They've held things together. We are back operating in our bubble. And what we don't want to create is a dependency, which is effectively really not healthy for society, but also potentially is not providing value for taxpayers' funds. And that's why we're going to focus with this £100 million we've put aside in generating the economic conditions to help our businesses succeed.
I'll just run through some messages. We'll just pick up as we go. Fran said to the Treasury Minister, with the money for the 9% teachers' pay rise coming from existing budgets, does that mean fewer nursery nurses, ESOs, cleaners and ancillary staff? A message from John said, well said, Mr. Cannon. Everybody needs to knuckle down, keep up the work of protecting taxpayers' money to pay for essential services. Another note that just says that a lady is a nurse who sent a message in. She's been sent into COVID areas in hospital during the peak of the outbreak and has been ill with COVID, still not well with various problems. Wanted to know if she should be entitled to 100% pay off of her pay while still off. Let's go with the education one, the 9% coming.
First of all, this is just demands or positions that are being put forward by unions. There is no 9% that has been agreed to, and I doubt, I can't speak for the education minister, but I doubt sincerely that he's going to be anywhere close to agreeing that. They've had a pay rise. In the circumstances, I would take the 3.1% and I would get on now and concentrate on delivering, as I said, the service that we all expect for our children. Just moving forward, I don't know that individual circumstances in terms of the nurse case. And there was one other you put there, Andy, for me. Sorry.
Let me see. There are so many. I'm racing through them all here. What you said was right. Everybody needs to knuckle down and protecting taxpayers' money for essential services. I just want to pull you back to the teachers, by the way. So I think to paraphrase what you were saying was COVID-19 means this is a new book. This is a new leaf with public sector workers, what you're saying.
Well, absolutely. I mean, everybody on the island recognises that circumstances have changed, or at least they should do. And, you know, the interim budget set it out starkly. It certainly set out that we fiscally can manage the position, and we were taking prudent steps to do that, and we've still got to do quite a lot of thinking about it. But we are absolutely not in a position to start giving taxpayers' money out or in any circumstances unless there is delivering now, as I said to you, the primary focus is economy, unless it is delivering absolute benefit and, of course, delivering core services. So, you know, we will, until we get to next February, we will not be in a position to determine a new fiscal strategy and vis-a-vis how things are going to be managed. And I just go back to my point, Andy. You know, everybody has to recognise that when we are in an economic situation such as that we're in, when people are potentially losing their jobs, when businesses are starting to have to sort of readjust their positions and need every ounce of support just to keep going, then it was fundamentally wrong for the public sector to be determining that they need pay increases. The teachers have got a rise. I think that their position they should adopt and now just get on and concentrate and delivering it. And just, I'm sounding harsh, but I just want to be clear. You know, I know there's been some excellent work undertaken in some areas, but, across this crisis, but the variance in performance really needs to be addressed. And I know Dr. Allinson is keen to try and find, better ways forward in the future.
Okay, finally, we've got about a minute left. You mentioned in the budget update, digital, green and safe future. Mm-hmm. Can you just give us a quick minute on what you mean by digital, green and safe?
Yeah, well, it's obvious. I mean, we've seen very, very clearly the benefits of digital, the power of our ability to communicate via the internet now. So we need to build on that. We're going to build up people's ability and capabilities, and we need to roll out the high speed broadband fibre we promised. In terms of green, I think very clearly now the green agenda moving towards a carbon neutral, carbon free, zero carbon is a critical priority. The world is very much on board with that. But more than that, it can help now generate economic opportunity and a new way forward. And that's what we're going to be focusing on and to help provide jobs. And a safe island, I mean, very much, you know, we're operating in a bubble, free, COVID free. We've got our health. We're we're able to operate our economy. We're able to see our friends. We're able to see our relations if they're here on the island. That's worth its weight in gold, and is surely a recognition of what a lot of people have been saying for a long time about the benefits of living on the island. We need to maximise that in terms of our attractiveness now for business, for jobs and for people to come here.
Thanks for being with us today. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Andy.
It's been a long Tinball week this week. Treasury Minister Alfred Cannon, MHK. If you've got any thoughts on that, by the way, we can take your messages right throughout the weekend and place them back on Monday. Call the answer phone on 682-631 or email maninline@manxradio.com. Man in Line's back Monday, 12 midday. Looks like it's a nice weekend too as well. Enjoy it.